here we go again. Swing Thoughts. It's raining in the park, meantime. The golf podcast, unlike any other. We're forging our own path. I'm golf spiritual leader. Why? Because a long time ago, I declared myself that. And, you know, what's that?
I said so.
because I said so, that's why. Coach Tim is with us. Very exciting, doing two shows back-to-back, last week, this week. And we had said we were going to go into our fall schedule, the fall season. But we do have some great news for you, Swing Thoughts devotees. This program is brought to you by TaylorMade Golf. Who is Oscar Bravo? Who is OscarBravo.com and SecretLinks.golf. And we're going to get to... this thing has taken a long time to birth, but finally, it is available as a book. Getting Unstuck, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf
Nerds.
You
wanted to say something else, didn't you?
No, I got screwed up there. 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. Tim, congratulations. Hang on. Let me see. There you go. How do you feel?
I feel really good. Really, really good. It's was kind of a surreal moment when I went on very, very early Monday morning onto Amazon because I wanted to check something else, and boom, there it was. There it was. And, you know, with all the Amazon stuff. And it was kind of a surreal moment, really. It was really, it was an interesting mixture of things that I was going through. It was kind of like joy. Oh my God, there it is. And then, oh shit, I have so much to do. Got to post about this on Facebook. Got to do this, that, you know.
Yeah, but
so
when you say surreal, like I'm looking here on Amazon, it's not there's several of your books available. Feeling of Greatness and others. You helped write the single plane golf swing. I'm not sure if you're aware of
that. I did. Yeah.
Why is it surreal for someone who? I mean, it would be surreal for someone like me who's never published a golf book. But why so much? Was it because it took so long, and because we gave you so much crap about it?
That it was almost Project 2025.
Yeah.
No, I think this one, because most of the... So, Mo book about Mo Norman was a biography. I co-wrote the Single Plane Golf Swing with Todd Graves. And the other books were about, some pretty interesting golf clubs, Devil's Pulpit, Ladies. So those are about other things. Me being sort of the journalist in many ways, just the writer. This book is more about my convictions about golf and our relationship to our thinking, particularly to our behaviors. And so it's the first book in terms of which I think I'm really putting myself out there.
Yeah, it's more personal.
This is what I believe. Here are a lot of my own experiences. This is stuff that I've learned. Here are some of the really interesting people I've learned from and talked to. And so it was just more, just like you just said, more personal than anything else I've ever written before.
Well, now that makes a lot of sense, as I'm looking through some of these books that you have written. This is by far the most personal. And I can only imagine that can be a bit scary.
Yeah, I mean, these are the things, in essence, that I believe in. And now for a lot of these things, there's social science behind it. There's experience of, I'm standing on the shoulders of people like Fred Shoemaker, Carl Morris, guests that we've had, such as Judson Brewer. So as Fred Shoemaker would say, I also feel like I have a lot of my own experiences to draw from, particularly as a journalist. Like in the 90s, I covered golf, for gosh sakes. I covered 7 Masters and US Opens and stuff. So as Fred Shoemaker would say, I'm not just a guy in a bar talking. I've got a lot of experience. But still, just putting it out there, it's kind of risky and it's humbling, and because you don't know how people are going to receive it. And, you know, sometimes it's almost weird. I've been writing a blog about this. I'm sure you've had this feeling, almost like the imposter syndrome. You're standing in front of a group of people, go, who? How do I have the gall to be standing mm-hmm. here and doing this, you know? So, it's all really weird shit, but it's just the way I think that my mind works, and the book is largely delves into how do other people's brains work and how do they affect their behaviors.
Well, I mean, I read this quote about, I think it was Rick Rubin, who's a record producer, produced some of the biggest albums of all time. If I were really smart, I'd be able to tell you who. But go look up Rick Rubin. He's
Run DMC, all of that. Yeah. AC/DC, so, Petty, etc.
And he was talking about producing art or producing content, in this case, your case, for other people. And his whole point was he's not producing it for the end user. He's producing it for him and his standards. And it's almost mm-hmm. kind of like, again, a similar quote from Seinfeld. About the audience has, he knows way better than the audience as to what is and isn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not saying that you don't want people to like it, but and obviously you've written it to help other people. But in the end, you've written it sort of to satisfy. You've written it from a place of some expertise and experience. And, you know, as I've said to you on this program, and I wrote it in the foreword, that you have a unique, you come at all of this from a very unique spot, having been part of this Mankind Project for many, many years, having been in the company of men as they suffer and helping them through suffering. And what do men suffer with more than golf, for fuck's sake? And quietly suffer. I mean, that's my experience every day playing golf, is how much quiet suffering that I observe in my fellow players at times. Not all the time, but there's an element of it in almost all the rounds of significance that I play.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that has always fascinated me, is what is going on in our minds? What are the things that we think about? I mean, how many times, have I driven home from the golf course, you know, in a sullen mood, the radio's not on, and just like going, oh my God, again, what yeah. the hell? And just in this, as you say, this place of suffering and the spinning of the thoughts of, oh, really? When am I ever going to get this game? Really? Just do I suck forever and ever? I'm in. and just, you know, the ridiculousness. You go home and, you know, if you're married or whatnot, how did it go today? Fine. But it's so much that is unsaid. And that's the stuff that fascinates me, is It's the stories that circulate in our heads. It's the thinking, the repetitious thinking, the circular thinking that goes on all the time. And what keeps us, in essence, stuck is those stories, the belief systems, the shadow, the stuff that we actually don't share. I mean, we would be so much better off, all of us, if we did have the guts or give ourselves permission or feel safe to talk to somebody and say, you know what, this is what's going on for me.
Mm-hmm.
And through that sharing of it, we feel lighter and we gain perspective. Even just in giving voice to what goes on, there's a healing process that goes on.
No, so I like what you're saying there, because that is, sorry to just stop on. I think we have a little bit of delay here because I'm on a different internet, so that's why I held up my hand. No, you're so right. And you know, there's just to segue to this show that we've been doing, and you know, yeah, could it have been more successful? Maybe if we had done so much more social media and all that stuff. But I'll tell you where it is successful, is that there is no other golf talk like this, because of the vulnerability of the people we talk to, of us, of me. In a little while, I'm going to get to a couple of encounters I had recently about this show. Hmm. But this is the kind of the way you and I have felt comfortable sharing the vagaries of the game and how it affects us emotionally on a very deep level is one of the reasons we have any listeners. Because, you know, yes, we've talked a lot about strategy. We've had great guests and Shoemaker and Decade and Dr. Raymond. All this stuff has been great. Charlie and all this stuff. But in the end, it's a place where golfers, I truly believe this, and this is why I think your book is going to be so successful for anyone who reads it. By successful, I mean it will resonate with people because they will see themselves, and I think with our show, they hear themselves in these conversations, and it gives them kind of a safe place to go, yeah, man, that's how I feel too sometimes. Hmm. And I can tell you, like I say, as I said to you before the show, I just came back from a 3-day tournament. Played with a bunch of different people, and I just have become it fascinates me. I'm just an observer of the golfer condition, the human golfer condition, and how it manifests itself. And I can tell you that we're on the right track because a lot of guys out there need what you're selling, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, like, so Carl Morris, I mean, he's friend of show, but he's also become, in essence, a friend of ours. And one of these things he said to me about the book and our shows, he says, you know, if we just keep saying what we're saying, perhaps we can change this golf culture from one of which, you know, people always look outside themselves for a fix or something because, in essence, they believe that they're not enough. And it's my conviction that you don't know how brilliant you actually are. As a human being, you're the product of millions of years of evolution, and there's brilliance that you can tap into. But what keeps us stuck, as I said, it's this thinking. It's how we've been conditioned, you know, since we were children. This part of us is okay. This part is shameful. This is disgusting. You have to match this standard. And if you don't, you suck. And that's the stuff that keeps people stuck, is all that thinking. So, and I've witnessed, and it was interesting you mentioned earlier about the Mankind Project. Like, I've witnessed men sometimes it just brings me to tears to think about it, just in their suffering, the shit that they've gone through. I watch some men in some of the processes we do on this week, and I go, like, how are you alive?
Mm.
You know, psychotic mother, alcoholic father, abusive uncle, whatever. And most people live lives of quiet suffering because they don't share it, because it's, in essence, it's weak to talk about it. But in this book, that's the stuff I go into. And one of the things, I'll just bring this to a close, is that I don't put myself off as a guru or an expert. I've learned a lot of cool stuff and had some interesting experiences. And so, as you mentioned in our show and in this book, I have a lot of first-person stories that I relate that are fun. But I think, as you said, the goal is not to self-aggrandize, but so people can relate to their own experiences.
Okay, we're just going to pause here for a second while I reset the internet. So we're just going to keep recording. I'll talk to the audience while you are going to be just cut off for 1 second. We'll come back in conversation this morning with Tim O'Connor, author, raconteur. Okay, so Tim's frozen now, but that's fine. Tim's coming back in a second. And we're going to tell you today, everybody, about a opportunity to meet Tim and I. We're doing an event on October 1st at Blue Springs. There he is. He's back. See, there you go. Hi, my friend.
You looked froze, man.
Yeah, well, I was just letting the audience know, October 1st at Blue Springs from 7 till 9. Yeah. You have a chance to hang out with Tim and I, get a copy of the book. He's not giving them away, by the way. These are for sale. And it's going to be a great time. We'll tell you more about that. Just how do people sign up for that? Or they just come to Blue Springs?
Well, they could just come, but it would be nice to, if you send me an email to tim@o'connorgolf.ca, no apostrophe in O'Connor, yeah, yeah. tim@o'connorgolf.ca, so we can keep a track of the numbers. I don't think it's going to be like the subway in Tokyo, but, you know, it should be a good crowd there and it's going to be fun. But I really look forward to the fact that you, sir, are going to be there. You're going to be our master of ceremonies, if you will, which is just to say that, you know, we're going to have a lot of fun and we're going to do somewhat kind of what we're doing here, talk about the book.
Well, I'm going to do a quick half hour of my act before the thing starts. I'm just going to do like, just, you know, not my full set, but I'll just do like, you know, my half hour Netflix special. It's, you know, it's not for everybody. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And the band. I think it brings my band.
And you should. And scheduled to appear, I just found out last night, our friend Ken Osborne will be there. He and I are playing. So here's the thing, Tim. Kent and I are playing in a tournament together that day, and we are making arrangements so that we can get out early to make sure that we're at, you know, because we're at a different golf course, and then we're going to go to Blue Springs. The whole thing is, it's all O'Connor Day, Tuesday, October 1st. And I'm very excited to be part of it and meet some Swing Thought people. You know, if you want to come and hang out with us, it'll be fun. STDs is what we've been calling our Swing Thought devotees. And, you know, I knew about one of these guys I'm about to tell you about. We're going to get back. If you want to get back to the book, we can. But I'll tell you about this quickly before I forget. So I've been playing in the Canadian Senior Golf Association. This is my first year in this 100-year-old association.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of this?
No, an old association for old golfers. I love it.
Yeah. It's been around for 100 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was invited to join several years ago from Ian Gibson, very well-known local golfer, national player, whatever. And I just sort of hemmed and hawed. And then last year, Kelly Roberts, former Canadian amateur champion, also a very good player out of London, Ontario, said, hey, are you going to finally join? And I'm like, okay. So I joined, and it's been an interesting experience. I won't get into all of it, but so the last 3 days at the TPC Osprey Valley there, where the Canadian Open is going to be next year. Have you been up there lately?
Not in the last couple of years, but I'm certainly aware of the amazing golf courses there. Osprey Valley, Hoot the Toot.
It was called Hoot Toot and Heathland, but now it's called Heathlands. I can't remember the other one. I think it's called Toot.
Dignified names like North and
it's, now it's
else.
North. Now it's Heathlands and North and the other one. But the last time I was there.
Could you imagine Jim Nantz say, and now to. to Frank on the ninth on the Toot.
So one of those ones is still named that silly name, but it doesn't matter. The when I first went up there years ago, it's about 50 minutes from Toronto. There was no clubhouse. It was like a trailer,
an ATCO trailer,
and a building, and a small building. Well, now Timmy, you got to see it. It's one of the most striking clubhouses I've ever seen. It's just fantastic.
Wow.
But the CSGA, the Canadian Senior Golf Association, has their annual tournament with like nearly 300 golfers from all over the country. 280 was the attendance on two courses over 3 days. I'm sitting on the range yesterday talking to Graham Cook for 15 minutes. Graham Cook, do you know a famous Canadian golf architecture guy?
Golf architect and very good golfer.
Very fine golfer in his own right. Just talking to him about golf architecture. It was the kind of play. I mean, I was there. This is my first time at the annual tournament. I've been playing some satellite events during the year, but this was fascinating for me. And it's a 3-day tournament. The first day is a partner game, and then 2 days of individual. And I'll get to some of the crazy shit that happened to me, but just overall, it was pretty interesting being around a bunch of guys. At the banquet Monday night, I looked around the room and there was probably 50 or 60 guys I'd been playing tournament golf against my whole life. Just guys I knew.
Nice.
Just a really interesting group of guys. But I ran into a couple of guys that I know very well. One is named John Husband, and the other one is named Doug Brophy. And Doug, you know, Doug is one of the best senior amateurs in the country, and so is John. In fact, a couple years ago, John beat me in a playoff at the Glencairn Invitational. We have a 27-hole event there. And, you know, I even though I lost, I thought, well, if I have to lose to somebody, it's kind of cool losing a husband. So through Brophy, who listens to this show, he's a full-on STD. Now, husband I know pretty well. I mean, both of these guys just played in the Canadian Senior Amateur last week, the week before, whatever it was. And if you follow amateur golf at the senior level in Canada, you know who these guys are. So I knew that Brophy listened to the show because he's always referencing it to me because we're friends at my golf course. In fact, he and I are playing as teammates next week in a 36-hole event. But nice. Husband comes up to me. He says something. Like, I wasn't really paying attention. I see him all the time. He goes, hey, you know, I'm an STD. I'm like, well, you've got STDs. Why aren't you?
That's what I thought. Even you were slow.
Even me. I was like, what? Why are you telling me that, husband? You're too fucking old. And he goes, no, I'm an STD. I was like, oh. And I was fascinated. I sat next to him at dinner, and he loves it. And he's a guy that... And I'm going to say this respectfully. Like, I wouldn't have pegged him as an STD. And that's a sentence I don't want anyone to dissect. I wouldn't have thought of him.
We'll just let that go.
I would not have pegged him as an STD. But he is. Because he's a deep thinker about golf. And that's getting back, circling now to the point I made a few minutes ago about the kind of people that listen to our show and what they get out of it. Because I think a guy like Husband, who's a very, very fine player, same with Doug, it's a place for them to hear stories that they have, that they would be able to share, that maybe they don't, I don't know, I can't speak for the two of them, but, you know, the kind of conversation we're having now about, you know, how golf affects us and how it has affected us and golf hell and getting stuck and our stories and shadows and things like that, that golfers, you know, you were mentioning the things that you've witnessed at these weekends that you've facilitated. Well, that's golfers. I don't think there's any other sport where people suffer. I know, yes, I'm sure tennis is fun too. But I mean, where we suffer, where we go over our rounds. And as you said, you drive home, you can't talk, you know, like everyone always sort of wonders why I mark my ball the way I do. I have it on. I have like stuff all over it. Because of the one time I played the wrong ball at the end of the senior am a couple years ago, and I couldn't talk for 3 hours. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And this weekend, everyone's on the first tee. This is my mark. It's got a couple blue dots. Mine looks like I'm a 3-year-old doing makeup for Halloween. It's just stuff all over it. And I always tell the story. I say, I played the wrong ball in the 54th hole of a tournament, and I will never do that again.
Yeah, yeah. Well... that's so, you know, things happen to us almost like this is the kind of stuff I talk about in my book, things that happen to us that are almost traumatic. I mean, that's a kind of a big word, and people go, what do you mean golf traumatic? And I said, well, stuff happens and it just shakes us up so much that if we don't kind of deal with it or process it, we take it into the future. So in the book, I relate that I was giving a workshop, and this woman told me this story that she was in her club championship. She's on the 17th hole. She's leading it. She's just about, you know, she's that close to winning. She's kind of walking up to about a 2-foot putt on the 17th hole. And the golf professional, and get this, talk about what a jerk. He goes, hey, if you miss it, you know where you can come for lessons. So I've just foreshadowed what happens. She misses that putt, and she loses her club championship. For the next 2 years, every short putt of consequence that she stood over, she was, like, shaking. She couldn't make the putt. So that's the type of stuff that happens to golfers, is these things that happen to us.
Golf trauma. I don't know if you've used that phrase specifically. You said golf is traumatic, but golf trauma is real. If you don't think I'm right, I played with a guy, my partner on Monday, very, very good golfer from Weston. I won't mention his name. He's been taking lessons from Craig Harmon at...
Oh, my.
For years. He's no longer at Oak Hill, but this guy's been... And Craig... The reason I mentioned Craig Harmon, because this guy is a great ball striker, but he's got such golf trauma around chipping, and I've played with him many times. And even Craig Harmon, over 20 years, couldn't get him to find a way out of being stuck in this chipping, pitching trauma. Not pitching so much, but even pitching a little bit. I'm telling you. Even the way he talks about chipping. We were having dinner together, and the way he talks about his relationship with it, you'd think he was abused by somebody named Chip. Like, it's unbelievable. Yep. And yet, and this is, again, the reason I mentioned him taking lessons from Harmon, because imagine, and this guy's got a great golf swing built by Craig Harmon. He chips mainly with his hybrid, which is helping him kind of, you know, being able to get something on the ball. But off a tight lie, he would be 50-50 to even hit the ball with a regular club.
Totally get that. I had a client for about a year and a half that had the chip yips. And the thing was, is that it wasn't, and this is the mistake that golfers make, is that it's all about technique and about their the physical part of it, being in shape, et cetera, being flexible. That all is really important. If you don't have good fundamentals, I don't care if you're a Zen monk, you're not going to hit the ball. But you have to be aware of your internal experience and the story that's going on, and how your body is reacting in those moments. A lot of people just, in essence, in some ways, you know, from, you will go with that, golf trauma. In essence, when they come to hitting the ball and there's people watching a tournament, whatever, they kind of like almost like black out. It's like just, they don't even know what happened, because in essence, their body's trying to protect them. It's like when you go into shock when you have an accident.
Absolutely.
So what I talk about in the book is that what I try to share in this book, that's why I call it Seven Transformational Practices, is that what makes us transform and heal and process through these things, like chip yips or all these different things, or a hole you can't just hit it over the water on. It's not from information. It's not from gathering more information. And it's about what you actually do to process and work through them. And that's why I've gone through these. I have these practices in there. It's working your way through these things.
So let's take chip yip. Yeah. Let's take yipping chip yips, or having trouble with short shots. And the reason that affects a lot of people is, as Dr. Pryor said, yeah, that's right, Raymond Pryor alert, that as you get closer to the green, the make-miss sort of scenario becomes more acute. You know, from the fairway at 220 yards, if you hit it somewhere near the green or around the green, you think, okay, success. From 20 yards, you think you're supposed to hit it close. So if somebody's in that, which you're not, by the way, but if somebody's in that kind of, if they're stuck there, what would be, because we haven't really delved into the idea of the practices of transformation. So what's a transformational practice?
One is, it's called story editing. And so often when it comes to a story, people will say, well, I suck at chipping. I have the chip yips. So they've declared that's what they have. So what I offer in as I say, it's a practice called story editing, and it's from two amazing academics, Timothy D. Wilson and James Pennebaker. And what you do in the practice is you write about it for 4 days. You sit down, and for 15, 20 minutes, whatever, you just write and write about this experience. And you, quote, free write. And what that is you just write, and you don't self-edit. You don't stop. You don't look things up on the internet, you know, wash the dishes or look outside for, quote, inspiration. You just let that pen go. And what happens is that you drop down below your normal sort of critical thinking consciousness into your subconsciousness. And you start to go into stuff, and you'd be amazed when you start to go in. It's almost kind of like a dream state where you're writing and writing, and you start to go and you remember shit from, like, oh, you know, this sounds just too cliched, but you know, missing a putt, and you know, in a tournament with your dad, in a alternate shot thing, and you're embarrassed, and your dad's angry at you, or something happens to you, and you have this emotional reaction to it, and it just builds, and so the story editing process allows you, as you write about it, to get distance from it.
I love that.
So the experience you put into language, and now you have a way to look at it. And as you do that, you gain perspective on it. As you write about it more and more, you see yourself more clearly. You see the event, and you start to, as I say, gain some distance from it. And you start, for sake of example, say, well, okay, I struggle at chipping. It doesn't make me an idiot. It doesn't make me inferior. It doesn't make me stupid. It just means this is something I'm struggling with and I'm learning. But once you gain that sort of psychic and emotional distance from the event, you start to heal through it. And what was very, very difficult, you start to transform. And instead of, you know, I suck at chipping, you start to have a perspective of, well, you know what, I'm not very good at this, but I'm learning how to do it better.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's called transformational practices, because it's not just you waxing eloquently. And there are some great stories in it, but also some practical ways for people to overcome the things that are holding them back, that are, you know, helping them be stuck. May I tell you a story? See, that's the thing. I love that story editing, by the way. I've said this to, in my practice, and I've said this to golfers all the time, that, in fact, Kent and I were playing last Friday, and we were talking about how people create stories before the round's over.
That's right.
And I've talked about it on the show before. We've talked about it, you and I, how early in a round, it can be destructive if you start to, and we all do it. Excuse me. As Sam Harris says, we're always narrating our own lives.
That's right.
And the problem with golf is it allows us so much time in between shots to create story, as you would say. And that's dangerous because, you know, not to be too obvious, but the story isn't written until you're finished on the 18th hole. But if you three-putt the first couple of holes or do something early in the round, we all start to go, well, you know, it's almost like we're telling somebody else, well, yeah, I would have been good today. It wasn't when three-putt, blah, 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 right? And yet, and we all do it, but I think, you know, through my practice, I've gotten better at of snapping myself out of that situation. And the reason it's dangerous for golfers, especially if you're playing in competition, is by being immersed in a story, and I want to get your thoughts on this before I tell you what happened to me. By being too much into the story, you start to make decisions based on something that's not really happening. It's just part of your narrative that may or may not be true. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I think I know. I was almost going to say I know exactly what you mean, but I think I'm pretty close to it. See, most of the thoughts we have are based on the past.
Yes.
See, our thinking is usually, it's one of two things. It's the future, mainly worrying about the future, or the past, ruminating, hope I don't make that fucking mistake again. And so we're not really, in most of our lives, even focused on what's actually happening. It's our perception of yes. what's happening, all filtered through our past. And that's totally natural. Our mind, we're gifted with a mind and a brain to keep us alive. That's its job. So that's why we ruminate, we project, all this good stuff. But we're not completely present to what is actually real.
Yeah.
And everything else is a story. I hope I'm staying on track here, but I had a interesting call with a client yesterday, and I you know, here's my first reference to Fred Shoemaker.
Shoemaker!
Shoemaker says that golf is you're just hitting a piece of rubber in a park, and everything else is just a story.
Mm-hmm.
This blew the guy away. He said, really? That's so cool. Because really, it all is. It's all just made up, you know, this thing about par and this...
Yeah, it's an arbitrary number.
Yeah, and this thing called an index, which we, you know, if we have a high index, oh, I'm not very good. If I have a low one, well, I guess I'm okay, but I could be better. I mean, it just on and on and on. And so that, to me, is just that understanding that it's most of it is all just story, and it's all just usually ego nonsense bullshit.
Right. And where it's destructive, you're absolutely right. But let me pick it up from this standpoint. Whether it's at the beginning, the middle, the end of a round, whether you think you're a good putter, you're a bad chipper, you're good with this club, there's this hole always gets you. You can't hit it over water. You don't like playing in front of people, etc. To the nth thousandth degree, what you just said is absolutely it. It's just all created. We're all just walking. We're like, later this morning, I'm going to take my dog out to this park where I can. I've told you before through the years that I have about 350 yards one way and about 60 yards wide of nobody around. He runs around. I'm chipping golf balls. And it's I have as much fun doing that some days because as Fred Shoemaker once said to me, you know, sometimes it's good it's fun just to hit a golf ball, to chip it around, to fool around. Like, I have no consequence doing that with this dog, and yet I get this weird buzz out of it.
Yep.
And you would look at me doing that and say, well, that has nothing to do with golf. Well, it doesn't have to. You know what I mean? I've hit some shots in that park that are I've do this thing where I try and hit it around a tree or I hit it over the like that are as good as any golf shot I've ever hit. And the dopamine buzz I get from it is very similar. But if I may continue the little GSL moment of instruction. So back to the idea of creating a story. What I often hear golfers say, and I know golfers listening have said this. I've got to get that back. They make a mistake. I've got to get it back. Mm. I three putted three in a row, and they start to press. So this thing is, I was in this event for three rounds. I'll tell you what I shot. I shot 74, 77, 77. So not bad.
Nice.
And I finished in my age category. They break it up by, 59 to 60, 64, whatever. So I was 11th in my age category and probably somewhere between 11th and 15th overall for the entire tournament. So not bad.
No, really good, actually. Yeah. Well done.
Not bad. As you said, could have been better. But at one point in the first round of the individual play, I was going along. And if I'll just tell you, if you've ever got a chance to play TPC at Osprey there, the course we played is called Heathlands. It's kind of like Glencairn if they let all the fescue grow in. It's so bad.
And you know what? Just let me interject real quick. It's a Doug Carrick absolute effing gem.
It's a gem.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
The fescue, it's a little bit, I'll tell you this, it's a little bit much for the average player. I don't know how they do it with green fee players. Because there's a lot of good players in this thing, and it was taking us 5 hours to play that 18.
Mm.
Part of the reason, so what they do is they designate the fescue as hazard, because if they didn't, it would take 6 hours to play the golf course.
Like a lateral?
All lateral, yes. The whole and they do that for everyday play there. That's part of the reason to keep the thing going.
Yeah.
So I'm going along okay, first four or five holes, and then I double bogey 6, 7, and 8. And two double bogeys.
Bogey?
Pardon
six,
me, sir?
Seven. Did you say you double bogeyed
in a
six,
row?
7 and 8.
In a row.
Six strokes in three holes?
Six over par in three holes. Six.
Yeah, that's what
and,
I meant.
Now, whoa. Two of them were fescue derived. I mean, I just hit a little bit offline and I got sort of screwed. The third one was a short par three. Literally 120 yards when the ball left my club, I was like, be the right club. And then it wasn't the right club, obviously, because it got a gust of wind and went in the hazard. So that one was a little bit of a weird moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason this is going to tie into story, believe me, I'm going to get there. So in my head, I'm now 7 over par after 8 holes. And the 9th hole there is a shortish par 5, 510 yards, but it plays downhill. And I kill my drive. I have about 235 yards to the green. And I'm standing there on the 9th hole of the tournament, 7 over par. And I had all kinds of stuff going through my head. But what I said to myself was, you know, because I could go for that green. I could have gotten there. But there's water to the right, and it sort of sits up. It's not an easy shot. But at one point, I was looking at my 3-wood thinking, okay, you're going to go for it. Like, you know, at that point, you're making a decision. Am I just going to throw this whole fucking thing away?
Exactly.
You know, should I just go for it and fuck everything? And I thought to myself, here's the takeaway. What I tried to do in my head at that moment was make a decision in a silo. Make a decision as to what I would do. I said to myself, what would you do if you were even par right now? What shot would you hit? If you hadn't just made 3 doubles in a row, what shot would you hit? And that's what I decided to do. I hit wedge, and made a birdie.
Nice.
Now, yes, it worked out. I made a birdie. That was great. But I made a decision that I wasn't going to make anything worse than par. Because as soon as I would have gone for that 3-wood, yes, 1 out of 40 times, it was a high-risk shot. Because it's not an easy shot. But I made a birdie on that hole, and then I went something like 3 under for the next 4 holes, including 2 birdies and an eagle. And it all turned around. But it turned around, yes, I'm the hero of this story. But the takeaway is, in that moment, I made a decision for the right shot in that moment, regardless of the fact that I was now 7 over par. I played the rest of the round 1 under, made a couple late bogeys, but I was so proud. What I was most proud of was whatever story was swirling around in my head. Here I am playing this big event, and what are people going to think, and blah blah blah. I just decided that the shot in that moment. What would I have done if I wasn't 1 million over par? And that's what I think gets most golfers. Is most golfers go either fuck it, because I could have said fuck it and just gone ahead and swung and shot, you know, whatever. I could have been a big suck about it. But that's and I thought that would be something that I think other golfers should remember, is that you're making decisions, just as you said a moment ago, not based on the past. And the past for me was 3 double bogeys in a row. I don't think I've made 3 double bogeys in a tournament or a round of golf all year. Not 3. A couple, maybe.
Yeah.
And you know what, Tim? Never the turkey of double bogeys. never the 3 in a row.
Well, what a great story, man. Thank you. We're talking about stories. You didn't get caught in the vortex.
Yeah.
You didn't spiral down into it. And so you made 3 double bogeys. What's that actually mean? It doesn't, there's nothing that you could, I mean, it'd be so easy for, you know, if you're narrating your game like Jim Nance or somebody, he's 3 over, you know, he really doesn't seem to be, if this season comes to a close, he's not really living up to the legacy.
He seems a lot of sorts today.
Yeah, I don't. You know, it's like, you know, it started to go south at Hamilton when he hit that shot out of the hay at that bunker there, you know? And I think that's played upon his mind. I mean, a story. I mean, it's really none of that. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with a very high ranking CBC executive and about, let's say, Hockey Night in Canada. And I said, I never listened to the pregame hoopla. I don't care about the panel being great with those people. I can't even come up with their names right now. Kelly Rudy, Ron, et cetera. Because it's all just story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until the puck drops that something is actually happening.
Right.
It's all context. What we need to pay attention to. That's the reality. And everything else, even if, you know, you go on. I remember Glenn Sather saying that when people say the Edmonton Oilers, I think it was the 80s, they won, what, 4 cups?
Yep.
He says this was a dynasty. He goes, no, it's not. It's just we happen to win. You know, you shoot the puck, you know, in overtime in a deciding game, and you hit the right post, and it's 2 centimeters to the left of that post, it goes in. 2 centimeters to the right, it goes into the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Just stuff happens. And that, to me, is if we can get that kind of detachment, then things become just so much easier.
I'm not sure if we said this on the show last week, but I've been saying this a couple times to some buddies of mine. I said, you know, a lot of times golfers think it's happening to them.
Yes.
It's just happening. Like, I mean, it's hard not to take golf personally because you're the person creating the activity. But, you know, I used to say this. I don't say it as much anymore because I've tried to do better self-talk. When I used to say, when I hit a bad shot, why does golf hate me?
Yes, that's
but,
right.
But I stopped that because I realized... Because I realized golf doesn't hate me. It just happened. Now when I miss a short putt, not a short putt. Now when I miss a putt where it just melts over the cup, or I had one yesterday in my second round that literally just stopped one more ounce of energy. Or when it happens to somebody else or me, here's what I say. I say, why is this game so hard? Or this game is so hard. Not so, because what it does is it takes it off of me.
Yes.
Because the game is so hard. You can do everything right, and that ball can just not go in. And it doesn't mean you're a bad golfer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, people just so fixate on making a putt and you know, this is clutch, man, and I got to make this and all this. You know what? You can hit a putt. You've just... you know, you can hit a putt on what you almost science would say perfect line, perfect pace. Does it go in 100% of the time? It does
absolutely not. No.
Nope. So you have to let that go. But you know, one thing is just I just want to share this, and I hope my son Sean will forgive me. Sean is he was a AAA hockey player, amazing, but took up golf late, and so you know, young professional, big strong kid, ton of athletic talent. But he gets caught in the stories. And so he sent me a text last week that he was really, you know, distraught. You know, he shot 52 on the front and then 42 on the back. And I said, well, what was the difference? And he said, well, kind of, you know, and we got to that he relaxed. And he let go of the story and that oh, I can't get this game. I mean, that was one of the things I share in the book is the what we called the intervention. When I had a total freak out on the golf course, you know, why can't I get this game? When will I come to the next level? And we talked with George about it, and largely it was like, am I playing for results or am I playing with awareness? And what you described was a perfect example of awareness that, you know, I could just say fuck it and hit the 3-wood here, or you, in essence, you witnessed yourself, you detached from the situation, and then you made a good decision. And sometimes, you know, not all good decisions won't work out, but it usually works out better when we're just not as emotionally tied in and we're distanced from, you know, our own self-narrated story.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, it's just as a pause for you listeners, it's Tim's internet, because you've gone warbly a couple times today just now. We actually heard what you said, but really? I've changed. I've got two different services here, so it's not me. It's got to be you. But I got the point. And that's the thing, witnessing and being in the moment, being present, making decisions. Like, you know, I said to Fawcett a few years ago, what I've learned about the way I play golf, or I've tried to make it my transformational practice, is that, you know, I've used this, you know, a few times with some of the players that I've worked with recently. I've got a couple guys I'm working with. I say, you have to stand for shooting the lowest score you can at any point in the round from any point in the golf course. I usually say it better than that, but at that point in the round, if I had taken the 3-wood, that would have been a decision based on being pissed off and petulant about where I was and how to, you know, like, and I, believe me, I've been that guy. I've done those things. I've hit those shots, and I can tell you this, there's no guarantee you know, my friend Paul Henrich used to say this, good follows good. Good follows good decisions. Good things happen. Now, yes, it was great. You know, when I made that decision not to go for the green there, yes, I could have said, oh, I'm going to make this hero shot and go for the green and make an eagle. What I didn't need there was more chaos. Because if I go for the green and I hit it in the hazard, I get up, I'm going to make a bogey again. Now I've gone double, double, double bogey. And who knows where I spiral. And I you use that word. It's so true what golfers do. Now, I was lucky, but once I made that birdie, here's what I thought. Okay, I thought, okay, I'm going to go on to the back nine now, and I just need to make a couple more birdies to turn those doubles into bogeys. I know that's, you know, yes, I was thinking about the past a little bit, but my goal was to get a couple more birdies in the round, and that would turn that three double streak into just three bogeys. And, you know, that's, I can score with that. And I was lucky enough to make an eagle on the next hole, two holes later, and I made a birdie another hole later. So I sort of eliminated all the doubles. But the point is that whether you're somebody that's trying to break 100 for the first time or 90 or 80, your decisions have to be made as best you can in that moment so that you're not doing the Jim Nantz thing where it's like, here's Howard. He's in the middle of the ninth fairway. And he's just had three double bogeys in a row. He's taken out driver. He's hitting driver off the
deck. Interjects. He goes, his legacy is on the line.
That's right.
If he doesn't pull himself out of this, I really don't see how his career can be sustained from here. He may just have to early retire.
He's off a side hill lie, driver off the deck to an uphill green with water to right. Give his chances of pulling this off at 1 in 1,000. Oh, there it goes. He scribbled one into the water, and he smashed his driver against the cart, and now he will be teeing off with 3 wood on the next hole. Anyway, listen, my friend.
Oh, and the caddies dropped the bag, and someone's coming.
The book is called 7 Transformational Getting Unstuck, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. Subheadline, How to Change Your Self-Defeating Behaviors and Move Your Goddamn Game Forward. Okay, I added that last part in.
Yeah, that's right.
Move your game forward. And, you know, like, I think everyone's going to benefit from this book in a way that they may. I think, like a lot of golfers, are going to buy this book and go, okay, if I read this book, will I get better? And because that's what we all do. There hasn't been I've rarely bought a golf book and thought, okay, I'll just read this and not want to get better. But I think what will happen if you get this book is that you will be less focused on what getting better really means.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I want to also thank you. I mean, you're all over this book because you've been a huge influence to me, you know, just as someone who's supported me in writing and helping me move from being a 28 handicap broadcaster to, I think you said I'm in the high single digits.
Oh, you're definitely
now.
Single digits now.
But you've been
yeah.
But anyways, it's but even borrowed, you could draw a straight line from book to you. So I have a footnote here. I've borrowed Golf Nerd from my Swing Thoughts podcast partner, Howard, to describe people like you in a viscerally appropriate and descriptive than avid, not as over the top, as obsessive.
Tim, I'd love you to say that whole sentence again because your internet now is completely crashed.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, but now your audio is garbled and I can barely see you now. Did something happen at your house? Did you not pay the bill? Gone. Completely gone.
Now
your audio, your video is completely crashed and there's no more audio. So I'll tell you what.
Wow.
I know. I can sort of hear you. So I'll just let everyone, whatever you were just saying about me, I appreciate it. I think you were talking about the fact that you borrowed Golf Nerd from me. I call everyone a golf nerd. Tim and I and some other folks will be at Blue Springs on October 1st. And we would love to have you all join us. Is that what, can we leave it with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, there
love
you are.
You're back there. Well, our listeners there.
Well, I mean, if you're not, and we, exactly, and some of you STDs that have always wanted to meet Tim and I, come and say hello. Will there be any snacks at Blue Springs for people?
Snacks, adult beverages, yeah, it'll be a fun night.
Will there be any, like those, like, vegetables you dip in that sauce? People, but what do they do, that, crudités or something they call that?
Yeah, but it's not going to be like the Golf Ontario Hall of Fame.
Oh, that golf thing, yeah, that was insane.
When I got in, they're not going to have that
that level.
They're not going to have the shrimp. You needed like a scraper to get it off.
Yeah, bring your own shrimp. This is a BYOS event. Bring your own shrimp. Okay, we got to go because Tim's internet is not working, and this program has been brought to you by TaylorMade Golf, whoisoscarbravo.com, and Getting Unstuck, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds, now available in book form on Amazon. And we'll see you next time. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time.